Welcome, everyone. You're enjoying the session so far. It's a very interesting session. So great. That's the title. And those are my co-authors here, Matt LeBreton, Karen Saylors, Serge Belong, Obald Tamouf, Pamela Focam, and Steph Burrell. No financial relationships to disclose. Before I start, I wanted just to give us a kind of a background of where Cameroon is for folks who might not know. So it's kind of right in the heart of Africa on the west, south, central western coast. It's a bilingual country where French and English are both spoken. There's a political map of the country to give you an idea of the different cities that are located there. And today I'm going to refer to some participants in our study who were from Bamenda, Ngaunderi, Yaoundé, which is the capital, Douala. So you can see it's next to Chad, Nigeria, Gabon. Good. So female sex workers face occupational stigma. I was talking yesterday about female sex workers in Burkina Faso, and it's a very similar scenario. They face stigma both from the way they dress, from the type of activities they do on the street, from the police, from their partners. And I'll talk more about that here in a second. This stigma and threat of violence really creates a security issue for them in their working environment. Perpetrators of assaults against I'm going to use the term FSW a lot in these slides, so female sex workers, include clients, partners, and security forces. And in Cameroon, security forces include the gendarmes, the police, the military, and other folks in uniform. So these are often common barriers to HIV prevention, and this is an issue in terms of lack of condoms, clients' refusal to wear a condom, and forced sex. I'll show a picture here. These are Cameroonian sex workers. So there's been a lot of studies done on sex workers in India. The Avahan Project is probably one of the most well-regarded and well-known. And in that project, they found that there's an urgency in really promoting safe sex strategies within their community. And this is both kind of two prongs, so advocacy and also about survival, making sure one can survive in this very difficult context that's quite violent and traumatic. So HIV prevalence is high in many sex worker communities in sub-Saharan Africa. And there was an example given in Kenya, study done in Kenya that showed that even though the prevalence is high, and there's been a lot of different interventions done to demonstrate condom usage, condom negotiation, and so on, female sex workers might not feel they actually own the intervention themselves. They might not feel empowered to actually implement it. And so that's a concern I want to talk about more in this project. There's also concerns around social cohesion, individual and community resilience strategies. And that's really the research question here in terms of sex work practices in Cameroon. This was a qualitative study. So this is part of a larger project, if I could just back up for a second, that's research to prevention through PEPFAR funds. They wanted to look at prevalence of HIV among key populations. So key populations are female sex workers, people who inject drugs, and men who have sex with men. And this project is just a sliver of that project, because we looked at Cameroon, Burkina Faso, and Togo. So we had large quantitative survey, biosocial survey, and a lot of different results from that. But the follow-up was to have qualitative participants as well, enroll them in the study, and then conduct qualitative questions. So we looked at several urban and semi-urban sites that I talked about earlier in the map here. Ngaunderi, Bamenda, Bafisam, Yaoundé, and Douala. The recruitment process was essentially a purposive sampling process. That's the way my quantitative colleagues describe it. I consider it more a snowball, someone who's an anthropologist. But essentially, we recruited seeds as part of the respondent-driven survey. And from the seeds who finished the quantitative survey, we identified other participants. And they would refer out to their networks, right? So their friends and colleagues and other folks, and then kind of go from there in a snowball manner. We used two modalities of qualitative, so in-depth interviews and focus groups. And the analysis was done line by line coding, and I actually developed a macros in Word that helped extract the different themes based in our code book. So there are four key themes that emerged in our data set. And these are based on, I actually read over 300 or 400 transcripts, but these are key themes that emerged out of a subset of those transcripts once we kind of triaged them for quality and language issues. So I'd say about 100 transcripts that I read through, most of which were in French, some few subset were in English. And so the main four key themes we found were that sex work was a means of financial empowerment, social cohesion among sex workers, and the term waka came up a lot, which is slang for sex worker in Cameroon, and they consider themselves to be colleagues in both family, community engagement with the greater community, and also improving the quality of life through their own children's education. So I'm going to read some different quotes that highlight these themes. The first one's from Bertua. This is Ms. H, who identifies as a sex worker. She says, "This is what pushed me into the street. I was married and I lost the father of my children. I had 5 children from this marriage. I had no one to support me. And I did not start sex work immediately. I lived with men, but then they did not accept me with all these children. At first, I tried to go into business, but that didn't work." We have Ms. W from Yaoundé, also identifies as a sex worker. "If I entered sex work, it was not for pleasure. Rather, it was due to the betrayal that I experienced with my husband. After he threw my things and my children outside as an only child, I had nothing. I could go for weeks with the children's clothes drenched without even a scrap of soap. I was here in Yaoundé that I came and start. That's when I came and started the quote, outside life." So as you can see, these two women had some serious financial concerns that led them to sex work. In terms of social cohesion, I'm going to read a few exemplar quotes here. So this is from Ms. C, who is from Bamenda, also identifies as a sex worker. "Sex workers prefer to associate with others who are sex workers, as they are always stigmatized. That is why you always prefer to have a friend who is a sex worker, because it even facilitates going out to work, because you will dress up and go out together, you will have someone to chat with before you get a client." Ms. L from Amanda says, "They help each other, but take too much risk. So when I go around, I prefer to go around younger girls so that when I reason with them, they will understand the situation and I'll help them to become something in life, or I'll make them to use their heads." This is obviously a sex worker who has more experience. Ms. K from Bamenda says, "We are already like family. When this one has a problem, that one helps her. It depends on your relationship. But we understand each other because today this one can go out, come back with no money, and we support her financially because tomorrow you too can go out and receive nothing as pay. And someone will help you out. So in that way, we really understand each other." And this is a theme we see again, and like I was saying, I did some research in Burkina Faso and here, that there's a lot of camaraderie financially among the women. In Cameroon, they have this concept of Njundi, where they actually have kind of a pool of money in which they put, you know, $10, $15. And if there's some type of emergency scenario, then the women are able to kind of give this as a gift or a loan, in some cases, to their colleagues. This is from Ms. F from Ngundari. "When you notice that your sister is afraid because the test, HIV test, well, it's quite scary to know one's status. One must give her some advice. You tell her, 'Sister, I went to do it, and it was easy, easy. There is no question, we simply take your blood and that's it. So just try to flatter her and also tell her, too, that's good for the sake of your health. If only she's sick, it does not mean that tomorrow she'll die, she may survive." So there are a lot of different HIV/AIDS interventions already existing in Cameroon. Unfortunately, they might not reach all the different sex work networks, right? So that's a concern as well. Moving on to community engagement. I'm going to read through these here. So this is from Ms. M from Yaoundé. She says, the police are horrible. For them, even if you have an identity card, you'll first take a ride out with them there. They take you. They put you in the car instead of bringing you to the police station. They'll take you into the bush or to another place. He asked his colleagues to leave you at a place, and when he leaves you there, he starts getting violent with you, he'll tear off your clothes, he'll rape you, and he leaves. He doesn't bother to ask you to use protection. And again, that's a theme we see again and again and again, that the police, in a paradox way, are actually paradoxical way, are actually not there to protect the sex workers, and so they're there to violate and abuse them in a lot of the stories we see. Ms. M. from Yunde says, "We know that if you take someone who does not pay, your colleagues will intervene, they will contribute. Afterwards, you're going to get paid back. We even call the police too when we have problems, but they don't really do much. Sometimes they don't come at all." And in another, maybe more positive note, Ms. O. says from Bemenda, this is about working with colleagues, getting collegial support. "They call us since we all have exchanged our phone numbers. We have our neighbors' phone numbers to sort out such situations. If it happens in my room," and she's talking about being in a brothel situation, if a client kind of goes south, so to speak, most difficult client, "I simply ring A's phone number. If it happens in A's room, she rings B's phone, and B will ring my phone, C's phone, and D's phone, E's phone, and so on. And we'll all come and stand in front of your room to make sure he doesn't harm you. That's why we always make sure we have credit in our phones." Good. Let's see. Ms. O from Bemenda says, "Yes, mostly in our territory, for instance, many girls have lost their lives. We contribute money whenever a girl dies. If we can accompany the corpse, we have helped out. I have assisted. Like last time we accompanied a girl's corpse, she died in Bafoussam. She was a prostitute. She died after giving birth." So they were talking, and then she goes on to describe that, you know, each woman gave $4, and it ended up being kind of a contribution for her funeral. In improving quality of life through children's education, so this to me is a really interesting outcome here. They say, this is from Ms. A. from Batua. She said, "This is where I put my kids in private schools. My daughter is in the gendarmerie. All my boys are at the Adventist College. If sex work is the job that God has given me, I take it with respect. I'm responsible for that. And that's how I'm able to provide for me, my family, and my children." So you sense there's a certain amount of fatalism, but at the same time, and we saw this again and again in the transcripts, the women would say, "We really don't want our daughters to go, or sons, I guess, to go into sex work, but we want to try to provide a better life for them." And so they're discussing ways they do that. "While we are able to send our children to private school, I have a daughter in college, a child who's in 9th grade, 2 small boys who go to kindergarten, and a child who is in 8th grade. It would not be easy to bear this burden if sex work did not pay for it." And I should have said this at the forefront, but in Cameroon, there's a high level of unemployment among women. I think it's around 70-80%, according to ILO. So a lot of women work in the informal sector. And if you don't have an education, and again, sex workers in Cameroon are making quite a bit more money than even some of their some of the professional colleagues there. So it's actually quite a good pay. Ms. R. from Bertua says, "We suffer for them today. We know that tomorrow they are the ones who take care of us, but not by this path. We all suffer here for the sake of our children. We would never accept that our daughters do the same job, given what we've all suffered. Thank God, because my daughter has escaped and I can count on her." Here's a quote that's kind of along those same lines, but talking about family in Waka. "We are already like family. When this one has a problem, that one helps her. It depends on your relationship, but we understand each other because today this one can go out." Oh, did I read this one? I'm sorry. So there's a lot of connections there about trying to make sure that they feel empowered. And they do, again, make a good, for lack of a better term, a good salary compared to other professions in Cameroon. And so that economic empowerment's a way that sex workers are able to provide for their families. And I've seen other transcripts also to try to have better health care. So I'm just going to go through quickly the discussion, given the time here. There are interventions already in place for female sex workers to try to decrease HIV and other STI risks. But it'd be nice to have those interventions be developed and really owned by the women who are targeted, and also to implement resilience strategies. It's important to think about power over resources, power within resources, and power with others. Social cohesion was a main outcome that we saw in the transcripts. and women often rely on each other for safety, health promotion, and also for childcare. So, more concretely, an FSW empowerment intervention would include HIV awareness, educational attainment, STI HIV prevention, condom usage negotiation, schooling guidelines for any possible children, small business advice, and possibly having a residentially based drop-in center would be ideal too. So I just want to thank our partners and our funders, so USAID Project Search, Research to Prevention, which was funded by PEPFAR. This was a project that was managed at CCP at Johns Hopkins School of Public Health. Thanks to all the colleagues we have in Cameroon, CBOs there. Thanks for listening.